Hello, and thank you for joining the Asia Climate Finance Podcast, which is about business and investment trends related to Asia's energy transition and decarbonization. I'm your host, Joseph Giacobelli. This is episode 36, and we talk about corporate decarbonization strategies in our region, Asia. Corporates all over the world are under immense pressure to address the carbon footprint. They must worry about their own footprint as well as that of other companies they're linked with, such as suppliers. In this episode, I chat with a specialist in this area, Albert Sutanto. Albert is the Southeast Asia Markets Manager at Mount Stonegate Green Asset Management based in Taiwan. Albert shares his experience on how he helps corporates to identify and reduce their carbon footprints, as well as raising their consumption of clean energy. He discusses corporate decarbonization strategies in Asia in general and in Southeast Asia in particular. And he also touches on the financing side of the equation. By the way, please do support us by liking and subscribing to the podcast. Also, please note the disclaimer at the end of the episode. Hello, and as mentioned, welcome to episode 36 of the Asia Climate Finance Podcast. And today, as I introduced earlier, we've got Albert in Taipei, who's going to talk a little bit about things on the corporate side. Good afternoon, Albert. How are you? How's the weather in Taipei this summer?
Good afternoon. Thank you for inviting me. The weather is really nice today. It's sunny. But I heard there will be a typhoon coming soon, so let's see.
Yeah, and everywhere else it's very hot and there's fires, and including historical towns in Hawaii being completely destroyed. So I think if anybody doesn't believe in climate change, they're really whatever. Let's not talk about the politics. But Albert, I really wanted to thank you for making the time. It's really, really great to talk about things from the corporate point of view. But before we start, tell us a little bit about yourself in terms of background.
Sure. So, yeah, hi, everyone. I'm Albert. So my journey in sustainability went back to when I was a college student, actually. So I studied about sustainability at the college, the university. So I have this little background about, of course, climate change, renewable energy, and how the world is really changing and how corporate are playing a role there. There are a lot of words talking about this climate neutrality, net zero emission and everything. But without without corporates doing the real action here, I think it would be really hard to achieve those. But yeah, that's pretty much about me, my background.
So, and you're originally from Indonesia, but now you live in Taiwan, right?
Yes. So I was born and raised in Indonesia. So I spent like 18 years. So I finished my high school in Indonesia, and then I came here to Taiwan to study. And then, yeah, this is where my journey on sustainability begins.
Talking about that, how did you get involved in Asia's decarbonization at a personal level?
Mm-hmm. So I'm currently working at Mount Stonegate. We are basically a service provider, helping corporates decarbonize. And my role here is assisting corporates in Asia Pacific region, especially in the Southeast Asia markets, which includes my home country, Indonesia, like Singapore, Thailand, Vietnam, and Philippines. So we help corporates how to reduce their footprints and especially how to increase their consumption in renewable energy. And Asian corporates are still pretty new on this thing, so that's right. Where I jump in and help them.
So your main kind of focus area, so to speak, is Southeast Asia, although Stonegate is Pan-Asia, looking at corporates all over the region, right?
Yes, that's right. So we are headquartered in Taiwan. Our focus market is Asia Pacific in general. So starting from South Korea, Japan, China, down south to Southeast Asian countries. And my focus area and my focus market is Southeast Asia.
So, to put the topic into context, when we are talking about corporate decarbonization strategies in general, anywhere in the world, what exactly are we talking about? Is there some kind of, broad definition?
Well, yeah, to answer that, actually, it goes back to a more general level. So we know that now everybody is talking about climate neutrality, carbon neutral, net zero emissions. And many countries have actually already set the target. For example, like 2050 net zero, 2050 carbon neutral. But that's on country level. So without the role of corporate playing action here, this will be a challenge because it will be very hard to achieve that. So corporate decarbonization is really the action and how really the world is trying to reduce the emission.
Got it. But actually, one of the reasons I was asking that, Albert, is because, like Greta Thunberg would say, there's a lot of blah, blah, blah about corporate decarbonization, climate targets, etc. And maybe some of the listeners may be familiar with some high-level rhetoric coming out of some consultancies, such as KPMG, who talk about, for example, decarbonization with strategic foresight, operationalized sustainable behavior, gain regulatory agility, accelerate climate-focused partnership, etc., etc. So, but from a practical perspective, and the reason why I call this blah blah blah, no offense to KPMG, but because it's very high level, and because, as you mentioned, it is something relatively new that requires quite a bit of education for people not familiar with the area to be more familiar, to understand it better. So, from a practical perspective, what exactly are we talking about? What are some of the key steps which you think, and in your experience, are absolutely imperative?
Yes, I totally agree. What people really talking about here now is on high level. So there is no real action plan on how corporates can really reduce their footprints or emission. There's no clear guidance or guidelines how can they achieve that. But based on our experience of working on this area, basically there are some key steps for corporates to do this decarbonization strategy. Of course, the first one is to understand your profile, your emission. How is your footprints? What is your footprint? How much you are emitting to the emission? So this is something that you need to know first. You need to calculate and you need to quantify how much you are emitting to the atmosphere. And then after you understand your profile, you know what you are currently doing to the environment. Of course, you need to have a goal or you need to set a target or which direction you are going. Like for example, if you want to achieve net zero by the year of 2030, or you want like a more short-term target, which is like reducing 30% of your emission from your previous year emission or something like that. There is a lot of international initiative or standard that can help you or guide you set the targets, for example, like the science-based targets, which really help corporates to set up a clear pathway and to set a goal here based on the scientific methods.
Right. And obviously, it requires a lot of work because we're going to talk, I guess, in a minute about the scope one, scope two, scope three, and all of the preparations the companies need to do. But in terms of, but maybe could you provide, Albert, maybe some color as to the state of corporate decarbonization first in Asia in general, because this podcast we focus on Asia. Mm-hmm. Is it more advanced than in North America, Western Europe, or are Asian corporates lagging behind?
So Asia in general is a bit behind of those of the Western world, like Western Europe or in North American. These big corporates from the US, for example, Microsoft, they say they are already carbon neutral and then they are targeting a carbon negative. And Google or Amazon, they already have or set this high level goal or ambition towards decarbonization and carbon neutrality. And also at the same time, the government level or the country level, of course, Western Europe and North America is already a very mature market for these kind of issues, like corporate carbon reduction and then renewable energy. But here in Asia, I would say Asia, we are trying to catch up with the Western world. More and more countries are now trying to implement carbon-related regulation, for example, like carbon tax or ETS, emission trading system, cap and trade, or even just a voluntary carbon offsetting program. And if you can see on the news, I think around last year, TSMC, one of the largest semiconductor company, which is a Taiwanese company, actually, they signed the largest corporate PPA, single largest corporate PPA with capacity of more than 900 megawatts of offshore wind. So I think that's a big step for Asian market, trying to catch up with the Western world in terms of decarbonization.
And TSMC actually very recently announced a major investment in Germany, right? Worth $7 billion dollars. And so obviously, being in Europe, they would also have to abide by the standards in Europe. Now, I think of Asia, Alberta, as having five very broad regions, and I don't mean this politically, culturally, any other way. It's just the way I think about Asia. Okay, it's East Asia, China, Australasia, South Asia, and Southeast Asia. Now, Southeast Asia is the third largest of these kind of broad regions with 700 million people. And this is the region where you spend a lot of your working time. So could you specifically talk about what is happening in some of the key jurisdictions in Southeast Asia?
Yes, of course. Of course, Southeast Asia in general is one of the important market for the national companies. Most of big corporates, they have a footprint in Southeast Asia, either directly, they have their own facility there, factories, manufacturing hubs, offices, or through their supply chain. So this region is one of the fastest growing region in terms of economy, population, and industry as well, technology, everything. So Southeast Asia is one of the key region, actually, of course, outside of China, maybe in Asia. And on country level, the government of Southeast Asian countries are trying to also implement this carbon reduction strategies. Like, for example, in Singapore, I think in 2019, they have started to implement this carbon tax, which is one of the very first compliance carbon related instrument in Southeast Asia. And then the trends of this, the fee actually, like it's increasing every 3 years. So when they first established this carbon tax system, the fee for each ton of CO2 you are emitting is $5. And then by next year, it already increased to 25. And then in 2028, it will increase again to 45, and by 2030, they are aiming to be more than 50 or even reaching 80 Singapore dollar. So it's a very strong or ambition as well in Singapore. And also, not only Singapore, like Indonesia as well. Earlier this year, they just released as well an ETSM, emission trading system scheme for power sector. And then to start on the power sector, they are regulating the coal power plant. So coal power plant is accounts for around 80% of the electricity generated in Indonesia. And then the emission resulted from that is very huge. So for these ETS scheme, they start with the power sector. And of course, from these compliance instrument, it will also pretty much affecting the corporate sector, the private sector, directly or indirectly, definitely. So either way, corporates, either your international companies having footprints in this region, or you are a local companies, definitely you're going to be affected by this. And eventually you have to start your journey on decarbonization. Start with your profile, emission profile, start to set your targets and start to do something, the action plan, which is one of the very important part of decarbonization.
In terms of the ASEAN, let's call it ASEAN countries that you work with, and if we just if we speak about each individual one, may take a little bit too long. But if we were to just speak about the kind of maybe the four largest ones, which would be four or five, Indonesia, Philippines, Malaysia, Thailand, and Vietnam. Out of these five, how would you compare and contrast in terms of adoption? Because obviously you have economic development differences, you know, probably Malaysia and Thailand being slightly more economically developed than Vietnam, Indonesia, and Philippines. So how do you kind of compare it? Does it really matter in terms of what stage of economic development each one of these are? Is it purely got to do with policy when it comes to corporate adoption of these standards?
Yes, actually, these the five countries, I would say, they really have a different approach, different strategies, I would say. Like, for example, Indonesia has started with the one I mentioned before with the emission trading system, but the rest are trying to still develop and try to look which the best method they will start to implement. And then on the other side, like Thailand and Vietnam, for example, these two countries, they now really focus on the development of renewable energy. Like in Vietnam, for example, in 2020 or 2021, the capacity increase of renewable energy, especially solar, is really, really high compared to the neighboring countries like Thailand, Malaysia, or Philippines. So these countries, they have a different profile, different approaches, because in terms of economic development, as you mentioned, they also experience a different kind of growth. And I would say it will also impact how they are trying to regulate the market and how it will impact the corporate decarbonization as well.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Some people may be familiar with the whole scope 1, scope 2, scope 3. Some people may not. So could you just very, very briefly explain that, what exactly it is that we're talking about in terms of disclosure? And if you could, Albert, compare and contrast in terms of adoption of these standards, because obviously I know that in a place like Singapore, being a developed market, there's already a very aggressive adoption of these standards amongst corporates. in some of the other jurisdictions, the adoption may not be as aggressive. But if you are, for example, a Vietnamese electronics manufacturer working with an international brand, then you won't have a choice but to adopt these because the international brand forces you to,
yes,
to adopt it. So could you just explain a little bit around that and then again compare and contrast the various, I guess, the big five in ASEAN?
Yes, of course. Well, this is related back to the key steps of corporate decarbonization. So of course, after you set the targets, there should be an action plan, what you should do. And of course, when you're talking about these scopes of emission, scope one, scope two, scope three, each one of them have different approaches on how you can reduce the emission. When you're talking about scope one, definitely that's your direct emission. So each industry sectors, they might have their own approaches. For example, in the semiconductor industry, might be the approaches might be different with textile or garment industry, definitely. And then chemical, cement, plastics, they have their own approaches as well. So scope one is on your direct emission, how you can really reduce your emission in-house. Either you change your equipment to more eco-friendly one, to more energy efficient one. And then coming to the indirect emission, which is scope two and scope three. Well, for scope two, it's pretty simple and straightforward. Scope two is the consumption of electricity or heat or steam. So the way to reduce your scope two is definitely to consume by consuming renewable energy. And by consuming renewable energy, there are of course different instruments that you can use. One of which the energy attribute certificates are most common known as RECs, renewable energy certificates, or in Europe they call it the guarantees of origins. That's one of the simplest procurement method. And then there are some other more like PPA, purchase agreement, either physical, financial, or virtual. There are a lot of types of PPAs. And then even you can do a stronger one, like you install the facility, the renewable electricity generating facility in your site, so or on-site consumption, or the other ways, like you go to your electricity retailer, they might have this menu, green menu, where you just pay some premium and then you can consume renewable energy. So renewable energy, there are many instruments or approaches that you can do. But talking again about the scopes of the emission, when we're talking about scope three, this is where it might get a bit challenging, because scope three is pretty wide. It covers also your upstream and downstream emission, which also might coming from your supply chain. So how you are going to approach your supply chain, ask them to try to reduce their emission. As you mentioned, like these brand companies, they might have not, or they don't really own their factories, but they have this suppliers that help them manufacture the products. How you're going to take them, or how you're going to help them also to reduce their emission, either by increasing the consumption of renewable energy or even reducing their direct emission, in-house emission. And in Southeast Asia in particular, when we're talking about the consumption of renewable energy, the profile again is very different because it's related with the power market, how the market is being regulated, right? In Singapore or in the Philippines, they are more liberal. So like the generators, the grid company, the retailers are different entities where you can really choose your own electricity supplier. But in other countries like Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam, Malaysia, you don't really have the options to choose your suppliers, electricity suppliers.
Right.
So in these four countries, you can only rely on purchasing certificates.
Right. Two follow-up things. One is, do you see some corporates basically deciding that instead of purchasing offsets or carbon credits or whatever, decide that also we'll produce our own, you know, clean energy, maybe clean energy to supply to themselves, or so that the clean energy output offsets their carbon footprint. Do you have some examples of that?
Yes, where the market is a bit challenging, maybe their only option is to install or invest in this clean energy generating facility directly. Like, for example, in Singapore, the land is very small, and then the option for renewables is very limited. So for big corporates where they probably have a big facility there, they might choose to install, for example, rooftop solar to supply a clean electricity directly to their facility, and it definitely will help reducing their footprints. But in some other countries where the corporates probably they have this or finance or budget concern, so the approach they take might be different. So they probably will start with purchasing offset credits, which is less risky for them. And then in the long run, maybe they will also trying to cover this by having a more strategic approach by installing their own electricity generating facility directly, or maybe even other types of carbon reduction projects in their facility.
So that we can better understand what is going on in terms of the corporate journey to decarbonization and strategies, would you be able to, you know, give me maybe one or two case studies? You don't have to mention any company names or whatever, just you know, a little bit of putting a little bit of color in terms of what we've just discussed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so I would say in Asia in general, when we're talking about this decarbonization strategy, of course, the approach and the action plan is always coming from the headquarters, wherever they are located.
Mm.
Whether they are US-based, they are a European-based company, they are Japanese, or they are Taiwanese or Chinese company, wherever they are located. Mostly, this decision is coming from their headquarters, which also covers their location or their sites globally. So definitely they have to know what options they can take or they can approach in each market. Mm. Maybe it's easier in European countries because regulation and the market situation are a bit similar compared to one here in Asia where the regulation in each country and the market situation are totally different. So they start to understand first about the market, where they are located, what options they have, what approaches they can take. And then from there, they will start to do the real action.
Mm.
Now, the real action here, of course, depends on each market situation. Again, like when we're talking about renewable energy consumption, the approaches here, for example, in Taiwan, are totally different with the one in Indonesia. Maybe in Taiwan, you can sign directly a renewable PPA, or you can easily install renewable generating facility on your site. But maybe that's not really the case in Indonesia. There is no other options where you can sign PPA. The only option, you can only purchase renewable energy certificates.
Mm.
And even when you want to install renewable generating facility on your site, there is a limitation on how much you can install, and then you are not allowed to sell back the electricity to the grid if you're not consuming it all. So there's this kind of issues or market situation that need to be clear up first before they make the decision.
In terms of your clients, do you have one or two examples of the journey of one or two of your clients in terms of, you know, what they've, how they developed these strategies?
Mm-hmm. We have encountered a lot of corporates, especially Asian corporates, where they start from zero. So first, they don't know what to do. They only know that, okay, I have this target. I need to reduce my emission, but approaches, I don't really know what I can do. So they will give us, for example, their footprint, maybe their scope one emission, how much is their scope one emission in each of the location, and then how much electricity they are consuming. And then they will list out all this, and then we will study them, analyze, and give them kind of like suggestion where to start first. Maybe in Asia, the easiest market to start when we're talking about decarbonization is probably China. China is one of the largest market, and the renewable energy supply there is quite abundant. And then the options there are pretty, you know, the renewable energy options are quite a lot as well. And the, I would say the fees or the cost of renewables or the cost of decarbonization in China is not as expensive as in other Asian countries. So, of course, the strategies for these corporates, because they have zero background, they don't know, they don't have any experience. So they will start with something that is easy and then straightforward approaches. So maybe, for example, their largest emission is in China and their largest power consumption is also in China. So maybe they will start with definitely not 100% of their power consumption covered by renewables. Maybe they will start with 10%, 20%. At first, they will try to buy what is available in the market, maybe buy 20% of their power consumption covered by renewable energy certificates. So they already start to reduce 20% of their scope 2 emission. So that's some approaches that corporate might take. And once they already understand the market, well, how these approaches are done in this market and how they can improve their strategies, then they might have some preferences. Like even when you're buying renewables, probably they want, their preference is to buy wind energy or solar energy, which have more or less impact to the environment compared to hydro or biomass or bioenergy. So start with something easy, something straightforward, and then along the way you can start, you can also increase your preference, and then the kind of like strategy increase your the ability to decarbonize in general.
Now, we spoke quite a bit so far about the business perspective, the operational perspective of corporate decarbonization, but what about the financing, you know, the money side of things? What's the linkage with corporate decarbonization strategies? Is it just an issue that if you don't have a strategy, you can't borrow, or is it one issue, or is it, and also how do they finance the decarbonization? Because whatever they do, it's going to cost money, right? So
yes.
Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, of course, when we're talking about corporate decarbonization, there is a cost to pay. So these corporates actually have to pay for these strategies. Either maybe in some market they are being regulated, so they eventually have to, expand, and they have to spare that one of their expenses to comply with the market regulation, or it's totally on voluntary basis. So voluntary meaning that they want to decarbonize things on their own, just off of their own strategy or approaches. And when we're talking about compliance, it's not probably not only because of the country or government regulated, but it's in some cases, it's your clients that you're asking you to do this. So this is kind of like negotiation strategy as well. You can have with your clients, see how they can really help you with the conversation. Because when we're talking about this, definitely what can we think of is these big corporates will start first, and then it will go down to their supply chain list and to a smaller companies. These smaller companies might not have that much big amount of money they can spend on decarbonization.
Right.
But there's something that you can talk to, and maybe these big corporates can help by providing some kind of financial incentive as well.
And what about some of these companies? You talked earlier about the whole carbon side of the game. Could you very specifically talk about, for example, are they raising money through these carbon credits, or are they just purchasing the carbon credits? Because some of these companies, I guess, would have a very low carbon footprint. They may be negative, whereas some other companies need to purchase the carbon credits so to offset. Mm-hmm. Could you give us a couple of kind of thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. When we're talking about carbon credits, there's always this two side of the coins. Some see it as a controversy. So a lot of, I would say a lot of organization is calling that as greenwashing.
Mm.
And then on the other side, there are also people that believe carbon credits is actually having a real impact to the society, whether what kind of project it is, whether it is a nature-based solution, whether it's a renewable energy base, or any kind of carbon reduction strategies. And actually corporates, in this case, is playing kind of an important role here, because at one side, they can actually help with the project financing. So either they can invest directly in carbon reduction projects, or the least thing they can do is to purchase the credits. So that helps the project company or the project owner to develop more kind of this carbon reduction, and it will create also or issue more carbon credits that some other companies could actually use as well.
So in terms of your daily work, say for example in Indonesia, just to pick one country, I know you don't just focus on Indonesia, but just to pick one market randomly. So you go in and help these companies do the, say for example, a manufacturer to do the initial assessment, or what exactly that does the kind of your work involve entail?
Well, I work on both sides of the game. So at the one side, of course, I help corporates plan out or set their action plan on decarbonization, how they can really reduce their emission. One, of course, is to consume renewable energy. And then the last one is probably to offset whatever the unavoidable emission they have. And on the other side, I'm also working a lot with kind of project owners. So these project owners, meaning that they have this carbon reduction projects. Either they are renewable energy developers, either they have this land conservancy permit from the government to conserve a protected forest area, for example, or any kind of carbon reduction projects. and they want to develop this and register this into carbon credits program, both international and also domestic probably. So that's where I work a lot. So I work on both sides of the game. On one side, I work with suppliers, and on the other side, I also work a lot with the buyers of the products.
Got it. I guess we can now shift to something which I think is pretty critical from everybody's perspective. Now, looking at your crystal ball, how do you see corporates' decarbonization strategies evolving in Asia in general and in Southeast Asia in particular over the next, 27 years, basically until 2050? I mean, do you mm-hmm. see an acceleration? Do you see a slowdown? I mean, how do you see the outlook?
Yes, definitely. Asia, I guess right now, the region in general, Asia and Southeast Asia, is trying to catch up with the Western world. So what we've seen over the past 2-3 years, both on national level, on government level, and also from private sector, they're trying to accelerate the decarbonization journey. So either from the government side, they're trying to implement a more or a stronger emission reduction strategies. And also in the private sector, they have already, most of them have already set up these targets, and now they are trying to implement that and start with the action plan. So I would say for the next 27 years, it will be a very important period of time. Definitely, as what can we see for now, is this region is really trying to accelerate and run faster to really achieve the 2050 targets.
And in just looking at the last, say, 3 years, starting from pre-COVID 2019 to now, 2023, oh, that's more than 3 years now. It's more like 5 years. Have you seen, when COVID appeared, was there suddenly a slowdown in, for example, your business or in the business of corporate decarbonization strategies? Or, you've seen a pretty much a steady acceleration? I mean, any differences?
Actually, I would say COVID doesn't really have a big impact on carbon decarbonization. Most companies actually even they start and they even put much focus on this issue, because in any case, when we are doing business right now, people now always talk about ESG, environmental, social, governance, and they want to see your performance, both from environmental, social, and governance sector. And to really have a good ESG score or have a good CSR image, definitely decarbonization is one of the key or the vital part. So I don't really see that it's a slowdown. Even during COVID, most corporates, they still put their focus on this decarbonization journey, and even they spend more time on this.
So there's been a steady increase and a steady acceleration in the last 5 years despite COVID.
Yes.
Got it. Great. Well, this was really a really, really interesting conversation, Albert. I really appreciate your insights and your time. Do you have any final thoughts or some key takeaways?
Yes. Well, back again to my focus market, Southeast Asia. Right now, I think most of the strategies are still coming from multinational companies. So these multinational companies start with the decarbonization journey in the East market. But I haven't seen a lot of domestic or local companies in Southeast Asia that are trying to develop their decarbonization journey. So most of them still are not aware of this issue. So I would say, I think we need to increase, or they need to also be aware of this, and then to really put focus on this. We can, because right now we cannot really do business as usual. Climate change is already a big issue, so definitely corporates have to play a role here, and Asia or Southeast Asia in specific have to catch up to the other market as well.
That's great, Albert. Look, again, I really appreciate your time and really appreciate your insights as well. I hope we can do that again soon.
Of course, thank you so much. It's a really great conversation we have.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Asia Climate Finance Podcast. Please note that the Asia Climate Finance Podcast is presented for educational purposes only. All information in the podcast must not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed by our guests are personal and may not represent those of current or previous employers.